Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
Bill Gross with us from PIMCO as we massage this report. Bill, good morning.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Well, I think I'm good. It's a better than good number, and certainly the markets move that way off of last month's difficult report. But there are still these structural impediments, aren't there?
Well, we think so. You know, there's a classic argument between cyclical and structural in terms of jobs and unemployment. We think that the dominant influence is structural, as you mentioned. We think it's globalization, which for a long time has been taking away jobs from the United States. And we think as well that technology plays a big part. And those are two structural forces that tend to persist for a long, long time.
Within that, and Jim Glassman mentioning he's more in the cyclical camp of a GDP recovery, does PIMCO see a GDP recovery? Can we at least get up to potential GDP?
Well, in terms of what we lost, we don't think so. And that's the gap that, from an academic standpoint, is being discussed by the Fed, whether or not to use targets that are on an ongoing basis, or whether or not we have to make up what we've lost in terms of jobs or in terms of production over the past 3 or 4 years. I think the economy is moving ahead at a 1-2% pace. A lot of the numbers that we're beginning to see are seasonally positive as opposed to seasonally negative, which is what we saw over the last 3 or 4 months. And so we're going to finish a quarter here at a 2% number, which I think is at least decent.
Bill, are you concerned about inflation as a result of QE3?
Oh, we are. And we're concerned about inflation not in the first 12 months, Ken, but really over the next several years. And it's a legitimate debate, not just between the Fed and the ECB and their historical models, but between those that would suggest that money and check writing in the trillions of dollars ultimately can create inflation. Now, the Fed and ultimately the ECB will have their model that basically says they can sell those bonds and they can basically cancel those checks whenever they want to. And I suppose they can, but ultimately in a highly levered economy, in a highly levered global economy, it's hard to sell as opposed to buy assets. And, the argument that they can reverse this process very easily, I think, is fiction.
Bill, when you look at a 7.8% unemployment rate, that will please the politicians no end of all ilk, and particularly the president. He'll, of course, give credit for it. It's his policy. What does it signal to you? Is that a denominator effect where there's statistical noise in there, or is that a legitimate move from 8.1 to 7.8%?
Well, I would be suspicious, but I'm sure the Obama camp will tout it. And legitimately, it is progress, and we've made progress since the mid to high nines, over the past several years. So let's give some applause to the president and the administration in terms of what they've been doing. Obviously, they haven't been creating enough jobs. The participation rate, as Ben Bernanke points out, and as the minutes point out, basically is something that, in addition to unemployment, the Fed is beginning to look at. And as you mentioned several minutes ago, that ticked up a little bit, but it's moved down from 67.5 to 63.5 over the past 3 or 4 years.
When you speak to your young troops, the people of PIMCO that are out there, and they're looking anecdotally at with Neil Kashkari and the equity team and your bond team, even your mortgage team, where is the wage growth going to come from? If we're looking for better incomes to drive the economy, where's that going to come from, or do we just give it up to globalism?
Well, I think we have to be cognizant of globalization. The problem becomes in terms of inflating wages, Tom, is that will wages be inflated relative to alternatives? In other words, will corporate profits give it up? Over the past 10, 20 years, wages as a percentage of GDP have moved down from 59 to 54%. And yes, wages, as you mentioned, are at 2% and not growing very fast. Should they grow at 3 or 4, they can. But basically, that will come at the expense of corporate profits, and that's a difficult proposition in this marketplace.
Well, speaking of inflation, but I know this is temporary because of refinery problems. AAA says you guys out in California are paying $4.48 a gallon. up a dollar this week?
Oh, we're paying a lot for gas. My objective, but my interesting target is the time when I go to fill up and it ticks over $100. I've gotten up to 99.53 cents, but that's about it. But sooner or later we'll get there.
Bill, when we look at the jobs report and we look at our central bank, we look at financial repression. I don't see any repression at your flagship fund. Five-year. Almost 9% return. 1 year, 12% return. That's 12 months trailing. Even in the last 3 months, you've put it on in the 90th percentile. What's the air out there? What is your methodology that has allowed for that total return?
Well, it's really quite simple, Tom, although the outcome is not necessarily in the bank, but an investor or a bond fund or an equity fund has to make a bet on reflation or deflation and recognize, you know, that the market power currently rests with central banks that can write checks and distort market prices. We are betting at PIMCO on reflation. We don't want to fight the Fed, but we want to be afraid of the inflationary consequences. And so consequently, the total return fund has benefited from one, from tips as opposed to nominal treasuries, two, from being underweight long treasuries and being underweight duration,
right.
and three, importantly, from buying what the Fed buys before they buy it, in this case, mortgages, which was a widely telegraphed move over the past 4 or 5 months.
When you do all that, you do have your off years. When you have an off year, what is it typically that you get wrong?
Well, last year in those dreaded 3 months of August, September, and October of 2011, basically, we were prematurely betting on reflation. And what happened during those months was that the market took a turn and a twist towards deflation. The economy was sinking. Investors thought that prices were going down instead of up. And so the tips bet, so the long treasury underweight and even the mortgage bet underperformed. And so, yeah, it's a long-term bet, and that's what the Total Return Fund and PIMCO basically does, is look at the longer term, the new normal, as opposed to what's happening over the next month.
Right now, the five-year break-even is really buttressing up against that resistance it's had. Can we break out to a new inflation regime?
Yeah, I think so. You know, there's hints that the Fed, Evans and so on, are talking about 3% in terms of not a target, but in terms of a cap. And so, you know, we see central banks gradually moving to the point where they endorse higher inflation. When you think about it, it's the only real thing that they can do. If they can't generate real growth in historical terms, if real growth is 1% to 2% in the U.S. and lower in Euroland, you know, in order to salvage or prevent historical debt deflation and asset deflation, basically they have to accept a higher rate of inflation. And I think that's where we're going. I think we should look forward to 3% inflation in the United States, not in the next 12 months, but over the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, Bill, you talk about figuring out what the Fed's going to do and getting there first. So what's left?
it's a good question, Ken, because that means that almost all asset prices are bubbled to a certain extent. The trick is to try to find what is less bubbled and what will be supported over the next 6 to 12 months. We continue to hold on to our mortgages because the Fed is buying, you know, upwards of $40 billion a month there, and there should be some good support in a distorted mortgage market. Also, we're looking to Euroland, Ken, because the ECB is just about to trigger their own program in terms of buying Italian and Spanish bonds. That's not a slam dunk. It's not 100% certainty, but if and when they come in, you want to own what they're buying before they buy it.
So you're buying bank bonds in Spain and Italy, right?
We're buying Italian sovereign bonds. We're buying Spanish sovereign bonds of short maturities. And yes, we're buying a few bank bonds. We bought some Santander bonds in Spain. And we're looking at other bank bonds because they're at higher yields than the sovereigns themselves.
What kind of yields?
Well, in, you know, in Spain, you're talking about 5 to 6% yields on intermediate maturities. Italy, about 100 basis points less. And when you basically assume that the ECB will be buying those bonds, lowering the yields, raising the prices, and that at least for a year or two, you know, we are in a relatively safe zone in terms of default for those particular countries, then, you know, compare that to a 10-year treasury at 1.72%, and you draw some obvious consequences.
Mm. Bill, I've made constructive chat about not a disagreement, but a point of distinction between you and Dr. Ellerian over the future of France and their ability to stay a dominant core economy or to become the new peripheral. Give us a Bill Gross update on how France is doing.
I don't think we'd disagree. You know, Mohamed has basically said that France is a part of the core, and I certainly would agree. I think we both would agree that France has its problems in terms of its budget, in terms of its moving towards a, you know, a more or a less market-oriented type of fiscal situation and budget. And we'll have to see how France can grow. I mean, ultimately, Tom, that's the problem. Can any of these countries, can the EU grow its way out of their debt predicament and do the policies either in the form of OMT or in the form of fiscal policies, which involve you know, fiscal stringency, can they promote growth going forward? I think both of us have our doubts that the current policies will do that. And so we're a little bit suspect on the longer term, but we're very confident on the short term.
Do they let you into equity meetings at PIMCO?
Of course. And Neil comes into our investment committee meetings at least twice a week. So, you know, we're a global firm and we're an investment firm that's stressing a balanced airplane.
Okay. Well, I like the balanced airplane. Unfortunately, the stock market seems to be imbalanced. Up, up, and away it goes. Do you ascribe this to central bank policy? Or as Tobias Lefkovich told us from Citigroup today, it's much more about earnings resiliency.
No, I ascribe it to policy. I mean, what we've seen over the past 12 months, a 25% pop in various markets, it's basically due to check writing in the trillions and, you know, to a lowering of real interest rates to unheard of levels in negative territory, which in turn, you know, reflects upon the relative valuation of stocks. I don't think earnings are going to be robust in any form or fashion on a longer term basis.
One more quick question. Can the 49ers play the Jets every weekend?
Ah, I wish, and Mohammed wishes they wouldn't. You know, that's the one area of disagreement we have on Jets and 49ers Sunday. There's some fireworks between us.
Bill Gross, thank you so much.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.